Hey everybody, welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
Today on the show, we're going to be talking about the modern distribution centers. And we have two special guests, Chris Jackson from Savant, Kevin Thomas from Blue Star. We're going to discuss a little bit about what's going on in the new technology in distribution centers, what's changing the DISTI environment right now, what's the COVID impact, and what can we be doing to shore up security in the supply chain?
Lots to talk about.
Exactly. All that, as well as our usual recurring segments, the value to the VAR, and what's Tech Connecting with us, it is time to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right, as we mentioned, our guests on the show today are Chris Jackson. He is the president of Savant Software. Chris, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got to where you are, and maybe a little bit about Savant.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. Actually, for been in the industry for over 20 years, so a lot of people listening today from the partner channel perspective will have already kind of heard this story, but I grew up in the supply chain, right? Early 20s was in the warehouse, so when I'm working with people, I'm probably one of the only people on the line or face to face that's actually driven a forklift, picked orders, had to take a urinalysis test at 2 o'clock in the morning for running my Raymond forklift into the only low wall in the entire place. And that usually gets a couple chuckles from the people in the industry itself of manufacturing distribution. So, grew up in it and, look at it from a functional perspective of writing software is one thing. Being a software publisher is amazing. But how do you make it really meaningful for the client? That is where a lot of the magic happens. And that's what we've been really focused on for the last 20, 25 years.
Awesome. Our other guest is Kevin Thomas. He is with Blue Star. He's a BDM on the Zebra team, specializing in transport and logistics, as well as manufacturing. Kevin, welcome to the show. Anything else that we should know about you?
Not a whole lot. I'm an open book. Like Chris, I've got a total of 20 years experience in the industry. Started off out of college, so same way, but on the other side of the spectrum, actually hanging and installing and the field service engineer for what a lot of people remember as TechLogix. That became later Scion. Took a little stand away from the industry and then been back with Blue Star for the last 6 years.
We got two guys that have been in the industry for a long time. Lots of experience on this one. Good.
That's what we look for. Yeah. So, yeah, as I mentioned, I want us to kind of get into a conversation about the distribution centers, what's happening with technology, what's happening with, obviously, the impact from COVID-19, because it's had a massive impact on distribution, on supply chain.
Yep.
We all know a lot of issues that came out of, especially in the early days of the lockdowns and as the pandemic was starting to rage. Chris, I want to get you started talking a little bit about some of the technology in the distribution centers. You hear about things like reverse logistics, RFID is obviously a growing concern, asset tracking, blockchain. Tell us a little bit about, what you are familiar with and where you're seeing some expertise and some insight from Savant.
Sure. I mean, a lot of the things that we're seeing around reverse logistics are conversational in nature, meaning it's a great talking point. There's a lot of tier one companies, upper tier two companies talking about reverse logistics, really kind of, I think, being pushed by kind of the Amazon experience and everything happening. My wife orders three pairs of pants, wants to know which one fits, got to send it back. We've got more companies that are moving their product throughout the supply chain and have some type of reverse logistics process there and or going green and have consumed a bunch of products and then have to get that off to a facility and want to have total accountability and visibility of that. So lots of conversations. You need to be a student of the game as a partner to have that in your wheelhouse. But what we haven't seen it in the last 5 years, we have not seen it actually drive pipeline, which I'm not trying to say that that's the almighty, but knowing who's typically listening to this kind of stuff is, it's not where we're seeing a lot of RFPs being driven from. It's not being the deciding factor, but being able to have that conversation and have the hardware, software, process type of environment behind you, either whether it be in another person or in your own knowledge, I think it's incredibly important to understand right now, because year over year, it's just going to get more and more front of center.
Definitely. Well, what about RFID? How is that starting to fit into the picture where it comes to asset tracking? Are you? It's one of those. I feel like it's RFID is one of those things that is always on the radar, mm-hmm. is always talked about, yeah. but yet everyone still seems hesitant to go mm-hmm. that route. It's not developing or spreading as quickly as it should be. It's to me, it's a no-brainer technology. But what do you think? What's kind of holding us back, and where are we with RFID?
I mean, RFID is what, a 20 plus year, 30, 40 plus year, you know, technology that's just really kind of had a resurgence after the Walmart Top 100 kind of really pushed it back in 10 plus years ago, but that project died. And I think that is your outlier, right? It's in the distribution channel, tip margins are so thin that when you bring in a pricing disruptive piece of technology, it has to have significant ROI. Mm-hmm. And with a barcode being a half a penny and doing hardware as a service now and being at the hundreds of dollars, you know, or less a month on a Zebra from TC8000, 20, you know, WT6000, something of that nature. Again, very, very great disruptive immediate ROI savings devices. That hardware, I'm sorry, that RFID portion, it really has to have a use case. And if you're not pushing that use case, I don't think as many customers are coming to the table every month looking for it. Now, I do caveat that now with COVID, no CIO, no VP of operations had on their, you know, their booklet, their 5-10 year booklet of the plan of how are we going to deal with everyone going home other than essential workers, right? Other than that actual manufacturing distribution team. Well, now we have asset management really kind of going haywire, everybody working from home. And I think what you're going to continue to see is, A, we put a lot of Band-Aids on things with hundreds, if not, you know, whether, however big your organization is, it's either double digits, triple digits, or quadruple digits of people going home. That was just getting them home, getting them set up. I think, you know, Blue Star could probably speak from experience of there was that month period of time where IT was like, how do we get everybody set up? How do we see everyone's productivity? How do we manage this new beast? Well, now we're going to go into refinement. And I think what refinement will mean on is like giving them a secure access point, giving them more devices, giving them more interoperability when they're at home. Well, that's just more company expenses that's going to have to be tracked. Easiest way to track that, throw some RFID chips on it, rotate an RFID scanner, send that home, send it out. It goes to Chris, then it goes to KT, then it goes on to John, so on and so forth. And I think you're going to see more innovation come in with asset tracking around RFID with that. We see people with high value assets, you know, really wanting to track RFID, but it's vertical by vertical, case by case situation. And I don't, if you don't tie RFID to a software solution, I think it's just going to be a series of one-off kind of pieces that people that look at. Yeah. Makes sense.
Oh yeah, yeah, it does. I mean, it has some certain advantages, and I like where you went with the whole COVID thing, because I think that that's starting to exacerbate or not exacerbate, but bring to the forefront the certain advantages that RFID brings to the table. And, you know, I always think about, as you know, from a reseller perspective, maybe you got a traditional barcode reseller out there, always been kind of hesitant to get into the RFID, but maybe now is the time to at least have the conversation. And to your point, Chris, got to be knowledgeable about what you're walking in the door with. And how it can benefit the end user, right? That ROI has got to be there. Mm-hmm. And maybe we're at a little bit of a tipping point in some use cases where that conversation can be had very quickly and the deal can be, you know, arranged relatively quickly as well. Yeah.
Yeah, yep. I agree.
Absolutely.
So I want to shift gears and ask Kevin a question here real quick. Kevin, we have, you and I actually kind of worked on a marketing project. It's been maybe about a year ago now around robotics in distribution and mm-hmm. warehousing. So I kind of wanted to ask about that and also about wearables, because I know that's something that obviously is relevant to Zebra and is very relevant to us mm-hmm. and, you know, Blue Star's market and our customers. So Kevin, tell me a little bit about where you're seeing with the actual like hardware technology side of things in distribution centers. You know, are robots starting to become a thing? Is it something people are considering, especially again now in this situation where you may have fewer people, you're trying to keep them further
yep.
apart,
right?
And then wearables, how does that fit in right now as well?
So automation to warehouse is obviously a very big topic right now, has been for a little while, a couple of years now, definitely gaining traction. You hear all the different acronyms, the AGVs, you know, the automated guided vehicles, the automated guided carts. So you have autonomous mobile robots, right? So all this is coming about. Most experts will say that give us 10 years and every warehouse will be, you know, in some capacity, either, you know, semi fully automated or some sort of automation, right? I think right now we're seeing more because of a cost factor. You're seeing a lot in regards to more of what I call a semi-automated, where you have human interaction with some sort of autonomous vehicle in a situation, right? So something that's following a human that basically then will scan, pick, and place it in that cart. You have carts that are basically pre-programmed to move around the warehouses. So yeah, it's a very strong, compelling story. There are obviously price factors that are basically that come into play, but you're starting to see the prices coming down like everything else. You're starting to see new technology, you're seeing a lot of companies get involved in it. And as you get more competition, you start getting that price coming down and makes it more competitive. The idea of using RFID and sensors. So yeah, it's coming. You have different technologies with the AI out there, you know, the artificial intelligence playing into a role and a lot of that, the big data, which is helping, I think, drive a lot of this industry as well. So very compelling story. And you're starting to see a lot more coming out and a lot more in the way of manufacturers that are producing this product.
Where I was going to go there is that, you know, I think that I like where you're going, Kevin, with the blended technology. And to be honest with you, we can pie in the sky and yeah, I can see robots working around warehouses. Mm. But the reality is, I think it's going to be a blended technology. Mm. I mean, that's certainly going to be the forefront for the next whatever, 10 years or so. Maybe it's an exoskeleton, don't know. But, you know, if I'm a reseller kind of, you know, wondering how to navigate that technology and, mm-hmm. and how robotics is going to be integrated, I think the blend is where I would put my money. You know, we also talk about automated cars and, you know, truck drivers, they're all going to lose their jobs because we can automate and we can have trucks rolling down the highway. Right. No, not really.
No.
That's not going to happen. I mean, maybe in 20, you know, we've had conversations about that. We're way, way from trucks rolling down the road all by themselves. So, but it might be a blended technology, right? I mean, we're all kind of, if you gotten a new car in the last 5 years, there's some automation mm-hmm. to it, keeping you in the lane. So I think that's going to be kind of the case. So from a reseller perspective, again, you got to keep your eye on that. Maybe start getting involved in some of those companies that are involved in that. And I know that like Zebra is getting into some robotics and things like that. So, you know, the vendors are going to start embracing it as well and pull people along. I don't know, Chris, what do you think about some of the robotics and stuff like that? I mean, from a software side, if you had to integrate into some of these systems that have robotics and whatnot?
Yeah, so we've been playing with this opportunity challenge, however you want to look at it. Mm-hmm. And we reached a level of frustration where mm-hmm. if I have a customer that has a need that they want to run carts, and I'll jump back and forth between both pre-COVID and post-COVID mm-hmm. and different use cases. So hopefully everyone kind of tracks with me from this perspective. So just taking a pre-COVID situation, running carts, you're looking at devices that you know, start at $2,000 a month to run over to a waypoint is what it's called, a empty cart, and a human grabs it that's in the aisles and they go up and down the aisles and then they drop that full cart to another waypoint that the robot sees and goes and picks it up and takes it back to packing and shipping. And with things like California going to $20 an hour, you know, now you're at that break even, if not save money by just deploying a piece of hardware that isn't going to get sick, that isn't going to call in, that isn't going to do some type of industrial accident, that isn't going to have any challenges, that just kind of just runs and does its job. And you continue to move through these form factors of robots, you have a totally different form factor. You have a totally different organization that's going to do like a cart picking assist. And you have a totally different form factor, a totally different company that will do movement of racks to the pickers. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you have a totally different robot now that is post-COVID that is running up and down the aisles in between shifts or after hours, sanitizing the entire warehouse, right. You know, in a non-toxic manner. That puts an organization stress of having four different throats to choke, four different applications, four different devices. So about 6 months ago, we went back to the drawing table and said, we don't want to get into the robotics industry, right? We don't want to be known as a robotics company, but we want to sub this device out that we want to let go for cost, because we want to move hardware devices through our partners and we want to move software seats within the industry. And you'll be seeing us releasing a kind of a utility device, utility robot, incredibly ruggedized. They can run carts, they can do cart assist, they can pick up racks and move the racks forward face, that can then have an attachment put on at the end of the night that has four, you know, UV lights on it, and it runs its routes with no one there. And when you get into the sub-$1,000 a month for robots as a service that have four different use cases, that's product unification, that's workflow unification, that's one throat to choke. And, you know, we're not trying to bring that technology to the table to, you know, blow it up in robotics. We're trying to leverage that technology. And that's kind of one of the things that I wanted to hit on, is like, we're living at one of the most exciting times as publishers. I see the world as a publisher, not as anything else. I know that technology is great for everyone, but we get to, as a software publisher of warehouse management, we get to stand on the shoulders of AI, machine learning, robotics, because beep, beep, scan a barcode isn't going anywhere on its own. Right? So AI getting involved with the workflows and the analysis and the making the decisions for a warehouse manager in a box, the robotics being able to come in and really augment and take that human element to the next level of wanting to do more with less effort, less team members, go into a COVID lockdown, and instead of having the best pick path, having the WMS work with the human, work with the barcode scanner, work with the robot, to now do distance, social distancing. Right, you're not going to do a wave release with the fastest pick with all this technology. You're going to do a wave release that says, how do I keep all of my staff healthy? How do I stay compliant? And that's a complete rewrite. And I would say that most middle market WMSs can't make those pivots. And then as partners, you have to look at that and go, who am I partnering with today? And where are they going to be in the next 10 years to continue to serve me, to forward face of that client the best way? Is that a good answer?
Yeah, very much so.
Yep. Much so, yeah. So I kind of want to shift gears a little bit and start talking a little bit about the COVID-19 mm-hmm. situation, obviously, mm-hmm. and the impact it has had on warehousing distribution. You know, we all know from the beginning of things that, you know, supply chain issues came up, obviously, as lockdowns happened, as certain items were no longer available. But skipping the supply chain part of it, even just when we start talking about distribution centers and either the ones that have managed to keep running because they've been considered essential services, which a lot of them are, mm-hmm. That are struggling to figure out how to keep people healthy. You know, you hear about, you know, manufacturers and distribution centers that have had to shut down operations entirely because of outbreaks. So, you know, when you talk about healthy at work initiatives, keeping your people socially distanced, screening them each day when they're mm-hmm. coming in and out of the building, contact tracing for whenever someone does get sick, mm-hmm. Cleaning, as you mentioned, the robotics, the UV, that was actually something that was tech connecting with me on a previous episode, was the robot that are able to move autonomously through and, you know, scan with UV light. You know, it's all about minimizing contact, but also still keeping your workflows running and keeping you productive at a time when probably more people than ever are asking for your products, potentially, mm-hmm. you know, given, mm-hmm. depending on what industry you're in. So, Chris, I want you to tell me, you know, how is Savant tackling this new normal? You know, how is having a quality WMS platform helping with these kind of issues and making sure that distribution centers are staying safe, they're staying healthy, and they're, more importantly, they're staying open?
Mm. Yeah, I think you got to go beyond the WMS to fully answer that question, to have value. But I'll start at the WMS, right? I kind of touched on it earlier, where you've got to be able to come back, whether you're a new prospect or an existing customer. How can I quickly work with a team that knows my system inside and out to optimize and get me as compliant as fast as possible? You know, California is, you know, very, very strict in what they're doing right now, New York as well. And we have customers there that need to have the system push them to an automated fashion to social distance. Be able to start to investigate that technology on, can I keep everybody, you know, in their zone for their safety, right? And then leverage some robotics to kind of move things around so that, you know, Chris, who looks like he might be sick, is grabbing onto that rack, is grabbing onto that product and moving through five different people's quote unquote area, right? Their 26 foot area, and maybe infecting them because we don't have those real time testing yet. So by using the software coupled with the robotics, coupled with different processes that you have to immediately write in into a workflow perspective and then deploy very rapidly, I think that's where you address it as a WMS. I think if you go beyond that and you look at some of the things that Zebra's done from having in their healthcare industry and repurposing those antimicrobial devices into there, and now you're making that be a little bit more the new normal for them, that, hey, we're going to look at the TC8000, but we're also going to look at this device that was really designed for healthcare, but going to repurpose it. We're going to bring that forward here. You know, you look at your ERP, which the WMS doesn't work without the hardware and the accounting system. And Acumatica has done a fantastic job at being able to show people that in the cloud instantaneously, that without any interruption, you can go remote, you know, automatically of having, you know, those cloud-based solutions. So I think you have to tackle it holistically. I don't think that you can just say like, hey, the WMS is going to help you through that. I always say it comes down to that partnership. Comes down to being that student of the game. Where are we currently at? What are we going to do to move the needle for our partners and our customers?
Definitely. Yeah. Kevin, I kind of want to ask you a tangent question here, because Chris mentioned the hardware side of things and talked a little bit about like Zebra's, for instance, antimicrobial devices. Mm-hmm. So, which that's one of those things to me, I'm like, that doesn't have to be just a healthcare thing. You know,
right.
Like I want antimicrobial
Not
stuff
anymore,
too. Like,
right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, especially now, I wanted it before, but especially now, like I want everything I touch to be some way resistant to diseases and microbes and infections, you know, right. And easy to clean in that route. Yeah. So Kevin, you know, what kind of questions have you been getting on the Zebra side of things and, you know, about these kinds of devices? What else are people asking for to help combat COVID and keep their operations running?
Certainly there's been a conversation about the microbial, but unfortunately to a degree, there's a limited supply or limited product range, right? So you've got the handheld, the TC5 series, you've got scanners, but you don't have it in a mobile or in a ruggedized, you know, vehicle mount, you don't have it in the tablets, but all these devices are capable of being wiped down. They can withstand that. It's just your heavy disinfectants, your heavy chemicals that generally are not recommended. So from that standpoint, well, we are seeing obviously a question being asked and people looking at that, but they're also looking at other avenues like, you know, remote stations, carts, right? So that's been a big topic. Mm-hmm. People are looking for that social distancing. A best way to somehow do that in a warehouse is to pull them out of the aisles, right? Out of those staging and create areas where they can actually work remotely. You can take a cart and you can have your printer, you can have your scanner, you can have your mobile device, you can have a display. So that's become a very popular avenue that a lot of warehouses, a lot of manufacturing are going. You've been seeing some of that obviously pop up. Everybody's hearing about it, and it happened in the remote testing, right? So you go into that even healthcare, but that also transfers over into the warehouse from an outside perspective, right? You have testing stations. So you've got, you know, situations where people are doing the automatic scanning, right? Not a Zebra product, but along with that, you generally might have a scanner or a mobile device that is going along that you're printing off banner or printing off wristbands, printing off tags, something like that. So a lot of that conversation-wise has been going on with COVID situation. A lot of new changes.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that I think that's unique about where we're at is that, you know, I often look at it and say, okay, so the changes that are societal right now or workflow based, are they going to stick around? Mm-hmm. Like, what if a vaccine came out like tomorrow, right? And okay, now we're kind of going back to where we were 4 months ago. I know that's not happening,
right.
but if that were to happen, there are still some of these things that are happening now in the marketplace that maybe would have happened 2, 3, 5 years down the road. Again, it's that compression that's happening, and kind of like where Kevin was going, carts. I mean, that makes somebody a little bit more efficient in their job today, or where Chris was going with waypoints. You know, I'm hearing a lot more efficiency happening in the warehouse type of environment that I don't think that's going away, you know, and maybe it's getting fast tracked right now, but it's not going away. Even where Chris was going with the, you know, how much it costs per employee and robotics. Mm-hmm. And now there might be a little bit of a tipping point there. These are things that are just not going to go away. Even if a vaccine happened tomorrow, you know, the efficiencies are there.
Yeah, right? We've discussed many times before the whole necessity mother of invention thing.
Right.
And obviously, yeah, there's been some necessity. There's been a huge necessity, and there's been a lot of invention and a lot of, you know, new applications and new ideas that have come out of this. But yeah, most of them, I think, are applications and ideas that most people are going to look at and say, hey, this made life better, not just in fighting a pandemic and keeping people safe and healthy, but just in our job in general. Why would you go back? You know, you're never going to say like, nah, we're done with that now. Like I said, the whole antimicrobial thing, for instance, you know, like why would you say like, hey, we're going to go back to having devices that are dirty and nasty and filled with germs? No. When you can have the alternative, why wouldn't you? You know, it's why would you go back?
Right.
Just like I'm hoping people don't stop washing their hands just when this thing's over. Keep it up. It's still important. Anyway, so I want to shift gears then a little bit and talk a little bit about the supply chain itself. I kind of touched on this briefly a bit earlier, but obviously we have seen because of this pandemic shortages, you know, toilet paper, you know, millions of other things. For some reason, French style green beans has been the hardest thing in the world for me to find. I don't know why. Yeah. I have no idea. I have no idea if it's related or not. But just, you know, all these weird shortages that are happening.
Yeah.
You've had, you know, you had panic buying, obviously. Yeah. You've had closures. You know, the we heard about, you know, like Tyson, I believe, or some, you know, some chicken manufacturing plants, whatever, had some serious issues with just the way they were structured, and these viruses start spreading. It wasn't a concern about the food itself, you know, being transmitting it, but that the people all in proximity were transmitting it around and making an unsafe environment to work in.
So then you've
got your staffing issues. So Chris, you know, I kind of want you to hit on this first. You know, what has Savant learned from all of this? What has made a difference for you, and what are you talking to your customers about when they're telling you like, hey, all this crazy stuff has happened. How do we make sure this doesn't happen either as this is ongoing or in the future for any other reason, hopefully not another pandemic at some point?
Yeah, I don't know that there's an easy answer there, or I would have already made millions of dollars and already punched out, right? So I guess I can only start off with trying to share what I would perceive a little bit more doom and gloom. And I don't mean that to be, I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just saying, you know, let's look at the current situation, all the cards on the table. Yes, there was shortages. Yes, there's panic buying. Yes, we're finally decoupling from China and bringing stuff home, but there'll be continued disruption while that happens. I was in Sam's Club the other day, Saturday morning. Night crew had already been there. On any other given Sunday or Saturday morning, that place would have been forward faced. Every bin location would have been filled to the max. They were ready for game time as that door opened up. And I walked up and down the aisles, and it just dawned on me. I've got friends and family in the USDA and inside the Beltway. And one of the comments, pivoting for a minute, was that every major city had at least 3 days of supply of food on hand. Right? So if they got cut off, technology, whatever the case may be, there's a disruption in service, you know, every major city seemed to have that average was about 3 days of supply. I was walking through the Sam's Club just last weekend, and they had 6 minutes. If there was a run on, you know, somebody puts out a tweet, and it causes a little bit of a panic, that every pin location was half full, and then they took the half full and forward faced it up to make it look like a full pallet. Nothing in the bulk overstock. And there's two sides of my brain here that says, okay, well, we should move to more of a just-in-time supply chain. If the automotive industry can do it for efficiencies, then so should we on others, because we throw so much food away, right? We hit this Best Buy date and it's gone. So I see a huge digital transformation to giving just-in-time, you know, food supplies to cut down on things being harvested and or things being killed and or whatever. I think there's a great uptick for that, if that's the only thing on the table. I see as we are decoupling from China, and I don't see this at all covered in the media, but you see it covered from your customers, from your prospects, from your partners, you know, all of our customers that are manufacturing are calling us going, hey, do you do some type of work in process? And you start to dig a little bit. Well, we're going to bring that raw material to us. Maybe it won't be completely raw material, but we're going to do more kitting and whip and assembly here because we can get the parts, but we can't get the assembled product to us faster, right? And instead of that being some type of trade deal, getting BMW to do another facility in you know, South Carolina, Kentucky, whatever, as a trade deal, now we're seeing companies being motivated to meet their demand and not have all these latencies in there. I think that as we do continue to decouple China, you're going to go from hacks that have been what trade secrets can I take to just all in out disruption. And I'm not trying to be doom and gloom. I've got some context and whatnot up, and they're saying they saw 150% increase in supply chain manufacturing and COVID penetrations. 150% increase, right? So COVID, they're trying to steal the data. Manufacturing distribution, they're trying to mess with the data. And I tell this to everybody, you know, make no bones about it. This is the modern war we're in. Anybody I've talked to inside the Beltway, they're not worried about a nuclear war. They're not worried about a land war. They're worried about two things: our ability to wage war, which is the supply chain, and our ability to keep our, we'll call them locals, right? Our people from going Lord of the Flies. That's the supply chain as well. So I know that's a little kind of bit over the top, but those are real talking points that when doors are closed and cell phones are turned off, these are conversations that are happening every day. And our nationwide supply chain, I'm not even talking our global, obviously that's been stress tested and seen to be weak, but our nationwide supply chain is incredibly fragile. It's having digital transformation overnight. It's being hardened overnight, but we're by no means out of the weeds.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I've learned coming out of this COVID thing is the term essential business, right? And I guess maybe a little bit about where you were going, Chris, is we need to get smart about what essential businesses are. What do we need to keep the stuff going? And how does supply chain react to that as opposed to, you know, it's the old need to have or nice to have. We need to have certain foods and stuff like that. Got to shore up that in the supply chain. The nice to haves, do I have to have a Happy Meal with a little character in it? No, that's a nice to have. That, you know, we don't need that anymore type of a right thing. Really interesting the kind of shock that this has put on supply chain and the reevaluating of priorities. I think your point, Chris, it's going to take a little bit of time, right? And so we're at a little bit of a fragile moment there, but supply chain's going to change.
Yeah.
I
do feel like the next level of where we go in supply chain is, and a lot of it's what we've already touched on, this stuff like AI, blockchain, and automation, the things that are going to make an impact. Obviously, this is the stuff people should be thinking about right now when mm-hmm. they look at this situation and think about, man, look at everything that went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Just in the early days, before we even really had any idea how long this was going to last, what the scope of this was going to be, if you just think just in the first month or so mm-hmm. of shutdowns and people being told they were going to have to stay home, schools closing, people realizing like, hey, we're going to need more food, we're going to need more supplies. The people that got scared maybe thinking like, man, am I literally going to be trapped in my home? The same kind of mentality that happens in little regional pockets when there's a major snowstorm or some kind of crisis or something going on. These things happen, and I constantly feel like all those are test cases that you should be thinking about and realizing like, man, we've got to be prepared for this stuff. And whether it's somehow figuring out a way to predict this stuff ahead of time or at least have an idea, maybe this could have been something that 6 months ago, some people in the supply chain were looking at it and saying, hey, there's a pandemic, mm-hmm. you know, beginning to kick off in China. Mm-hmm. It's slowly trickling its way here. Everyone's forecasting this as something that might spread across the world. What do we need to be doing right now? Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like that happened that much. No. I feel like that it took several months until the need was there and it was overwhelming and people were running out. Panic buying was occurring.
Yep.
So
human nature to a certain degree there.
Very much so, yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, I do want to finish off with talking about maybe some specific industries where, you know, that have been impacted, obviously, by the situation and by the shortages and by what's happening in supply chain. Retail, obviously, is a big one to start. You had a lot of people that started asking for same-day shipping. A lot mm-hmm. of people started asking for ship to home. Omnichannel became a bigger thing. You know, buy online, pick up in store.
Not just asking, needing, right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's not that wasn't a nice to have for a little while there. Now we're
exactly
need to have.
Like if you wanted pretty much anything outside of groceries, you had to find another way to get it, or you know, and they had to find a store that was able to get it to you. Yep. A couple little stats, we've talked about these before, I think, but 88% of shoppers said that they are willing to pay for same day or faster. Now, this was, I think, a stat taken early in the year before the outbreak really even picked up, so I'm sure that's even higher than ever now. Mm-hmm. And another one that by 2023, nearly every logistics company will offer same day delivery. Again, I wouldn't be surprised if that's going to be accelerated quite a bit as well, given where we are right now. So you think of retail, you think of food production. We've talked about that a few times, that there's either whether it's over or under production, whether they're not producing enough because they didn't anticipate need, or you know, you hear about farmers and you hear about producers that have way too much. And you know, when they're not selling it to businesses and they're not selling it to schools anymore, they have too much stuff that they have to get rid of. Chris, you mentioned like the Best Buy dates that, you know, we're throwing stuff out because we've maybe overstocked it and not selling enough. Mm-hmm. And then just the design of the facilities themselves, these food production facilities that, you know, encourage a lot of people crammed into spaces to be as efficient as possible, have an assembly line, you know, set up where you've got a bunch of people that are elbow to elbow. Obviously not a great thing when you've got to worry about a virus spreading from person to person.
Maybe good for efficiency, not really good when you're in a pandemic.
Exactly. Yeah. And then healthcare, where, you know, PPE supplies, critical equipment became, you know, a massive issue and still is to some extent, you know, as we, you know, enter another phase of outbreaks and spreads around the country, that getting that equipment where it needs to go. So, Chris, I was curious from your perspective, you know, what industries, you know, are there any industries we've missed that you feel like are getting really strongly impacted? And, you know, what kind of questions and concerns are you getting from those industries at Savant?
I mean, I think there's some industries obviously that are getting crushed, right? Which are the ones that we can't go to or don't even want to go to. Like if I had children that were young, I wouldn't be going to Peter Piper Pizza or Dave and Buster's or Chuck E. Cheese ever again, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to down that, but we have clients that were, you know, had multi-hundred-plus-thousand square foot warehouses servicing those industries. You know, what are they doing right now? There's no questions from them that they're asking me. You know, they're like, what does our future look like? You know, can we make it back? Will there ever be a normal where you go into those environments where you have close proximity touching and especially with children? So I don't think we're getting questions necessarily from the organizations that and companies that are in verticals that are getting kind of hurt, I would call it, the most. What we're seeing is you guys touched on it a few minutes ago, which is the immediate push by the SMB market for digital transformation today. So many people were just kind of hanging on, like, I don't know if I really believe in the cloud. I don't know if that's something I want to go to. I've got my own server. You know, especially through, we'll call it that manufacturing belt that you have up there, you know, kind of from Michigan all the way over to Pennsylvania, very much on-prem, very much, I don't want to call it old school, but more like medium school from that perspective. And overnight, it didn't matter. Overnight, that you're going to whatever that digital transformation kind of looks like. So the questions coming out for those areas were, how do I get to the cloud? How do I get to a browser experience? How do I manage all of this, both inside and outside the four walls? And I really believe that was a shortfall that people weren't prepared to answer, that hadn't already at a hardware software level made that digital transformation internally, that had the experience, right? Or had the customer base to say, this is what we've done before. I know you're doing it, you know, today because of it, for the pandemic, but for the last 5 years, we've been doing, you know, cloud-based digital transformation just because. Well, now you have a different reason, different motivating factor, but you're going to follow some of the same best practices. So I hope that was an answer. It wasn't specific to what you were saying on what people are asking. Again, it seems to be most focused on that digital transformation, ERP, CRM, WMS, shipping manifest, getting that whole thing into the cloud to take one burden off that internal team, or a series of burdens off the internal team.
Definitely. Well, this is one of those conversations I feel like we could easily spend hours on.
Lots of transformation happening.
And dive into a bunch of different topics. Chris, maybe we'll have you back on to kind of do a deeper dive in some of these topics in the future. But for us to kind of shift gears a little bit. I do want to thank our guests for, you know, what we've discussed so far. And also to let our listeners know that if you have any questions, your own insights, or, you know, you want to reach out to our guests, feel free to contact us. You can find us on Twitter at TechConnectPod. You can also email us TechConnect@BlueStarInc.com. We do want to shift over to our recurring segments. The first is the value to the VAR. This is where we kind of wrap up our conversation of everything we've talked about and ask a question that's related specifically to our reseller partners. My question today, and Kevin, I'll let you kick this one off, is, you know, why should VARs be partnering with a WMS software provider to tackle these current distribution and warehousing issues? I'm sure those are questions that probably come through you and your team quite often. You know, if we've got some issues. We get that you guys do the hardware stuff at Blue Star, but we, you know, we're really interested in figuring out, you know, what we can do from a software perspective. How do you help out with those?
So, yeah, to kick off, I mean, you want to couple with the WMS. You want our ISV community, right? They are an extremely valuable resource because they're seeing a lot more of this. They're hearing a lot more of these questions and seeing a lot more of these concerns. They're really those experts, right? They're the ones that have the solutions to kind of transverse and, you know, at least start these conversations about what it is that you're doing in your warehouse, what you're not doing, you know, what's your pain point. And they have the ability to then roadmap that solution. And as Chris kind of already alluded, so many ways and so many things going on. I mean, it might surprise some people that there are warehouses and manufacturing facilities that aren't automated yet. And what I mean by that is they don't have barcodes. They don't have mobile devices, right? They're still using paper and pencil. How do they get through some sort of an episode like this pandemic? Because you're talking about reduced staff, right? Reduced employees because of illness. So you really needed to be in an automated, at least some sort of, you know, process. So it's our ISV community. It's the companies like Savant that'll help try to answer those questions, try to put a program together, have a lot of variable information from not just the software, but from the back end information tying into your accounting systems to AI, to cloud, right? All these, to blockchain. They are really, in a lot of cases, a single source entity for a lot of this type of information. As Chris alluded, they're getting into autonomous, you know, type vehicles, right? So they're in security, right? So they're into a lot of areas that really kind of bring everything together, and they really are that single source entity to answer a lot of questions and solve a lot of problems.
You know, to that point, though, I wonder to myself, because, you know, obviously Blue Star, we have resellers that are broad across the spectrum of their capabilities. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have traditional ADC barcode resellers, but we also have a lot of point of sale resellers. We've got networking folks. We've got folks in the digital signage arena. And, you know, at the end of the road, especially those resellers that service the small to medium sized businesses, maybe even more on the small side, and where I'm going with this part of my conversation, or the conversation, is, you know, they try to be the jack of all trades a lot of time. And now with the digital transformation that's happening, they kind of got to get up to speed maybe on some technology. So if I was like a POS reseller, for example, and yeah, I knew back of house was there and it is a thing and those types of things. But now it's kind of being expedited, the need to get the whole digital transformation, the need to get online, the need, all these good things that are happening. Chris, let me throw you a question. Maybe, I don't hope it's not too much of a curveball, but if you had a reseller that had never really been in the WMS world or played in this field, do you got like one piece of advice of where should they go first, you know, or what part of the WMS should they learn first so that they can service their small business customers who need to start going through that digital transformation? You got any words of wisdom there?
Yeah, I could probably spend 15, 20 minutes on this one because it's a part of our partner enablement program, right? Okay. So I'll try to boil it down to just the basics here is when looking at a WMS partner, typically the challenge has been that the partner needs like a matrix, mm-hmm. right? What vertical are they in? How big are they? What feature functionality do they need? And that's a tribal knowledge that's 10, 20 years of experience that 25 to 35 year old individual that's got 5 years plus experience just doesn't know. And they steer away from it organically, not on purpose, just kind of like, that's got some hair on it. I don't want to deal with that. So what we did was we went from tier two, tier three, all the way down into tier four from a single code base, from a single implementation, from a single UI UX, and created something called Savant ADC. It can be standalone, $50 a user a month. I call it two scoops of vanilla. There's no sprinkles, there's no whipped cream, there's no cherry on top. It's literally receiving, inventory, order fulfillment, cycle counting, replenishment, ship confirmation. They're kind of your six pillars that you need to get started with. Mm-hmm. And I'd say in the mid-market to the lower mid-market, if they're coming off paper, that's all they need. Now, you might have an individual there that is fighting for that tier two solution, feeling that if I don't go tier two, I'll never get there. Mm-hmm. And the second portion of what we do in our partner enablement is show them we've already deployed the tier two solution. We just haven't given you the license key to turn that feature functionality on. And then you watch that CFO, COO, VP of operations go, oh, cool. Yeah, I can literally just get a new license key and turn on work in process, turn on shipping manifest, turn on lot and serial, turn on container tracking. Yes, obviously implementation, possibility on integration enhancements, but that base system from the IT department to the users to the UI UX, that's all the same. I'd say that's probably the most disruptive thing we've done is given the ability for especially these new partners that are the jack of all trades that say, I'm not touching that WMS thing. It's way too complicated. Now we're breadcrumbing them into that channel, giving them something where they can win, because anytime somebody puts in a light WMS, that company's going to grow. Mm-hmm. Right now, the partners over 3 to 5 year period of time, they're growing with that customer, learning more as they go, continuing to monetize, getting new hardware put in, getting new licenses. It's a crawl, walk, run versus kind of jumping into the deep end right away.
I love it. I didn't know I teed you up such a nice question there. I honestly didn't. That's the perfect answer, though. If I had my reseller hat on as I was listening to you, I'm like, that's exactly what I would need, right? Walk, run, jog, run. Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Good for you, Chris.
Yeah. Dean, do you have anything else to add? Any other suggestions?
No. Like I said, I was just putting on that hat and I was thinking to myself, well, how would you just start dipping your toe in there? And I love it. Two scoops of vanilla. That's all they need, coming out of the gate. If I had just the two scoops of vanilla, I'd sell the hell out of it.
That's right.
I'd be good with that.
That's right. So, all right. Well, that was actually a fantastic collection of answers there.
There you go.
And we're going to change over to our fun portion of the show, which is where we talk about what's tech connecting with us. Mm-hmm. This is where we talk about one or two pieces of technology that are exciting, impacting us right now. Could be something we've been reading about, could be something we're using, something we're playing with, or just something that we think is just neat and cool. Mm-hmm. Chris, I'll let you start. What's tech connecting with you right now?
I read a book called Life After Google. It's a few years old, and it's really taking a look at technology based on big data. Big data was fantastic. These multi-billion dollar, trillion dollar organizations were built on big data, harvesting our information. But at some point, that it reaches a tipping point that we're reaching now, where that's where all the vulnerabilities come from, right? Mm. So that's where the thought process came from. And we've stepped into some cool technology that we'll be kind of sharing and releasing through a partnership on a secure browser. Just a secure browser, same internet. I kind of tell anybody that I talk to about it and while we're in beta is everyone goes to the same internet, right? So how you get there, how you hang out there, what is your anonymity? What does your security look like? That is something that's really near and dear to my heart, especially with kids and having something of that nature. You've got other things that are out there that are like Brave and DuckDuckGo and whatever that kind of miss the mark. So technology that I'm really kind of playing with is the secure browser, the secure access point, things of that nature that I think are going to really change the way businesses operate over the next 10 years, because that big data has to go away if we are going to become a more secure and anonymous society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah. That's a good one.
Which, you got to think there's a lot of companies out there that don't want big data to go away right now that are making their living off of that. But, but they're butting heads with, the privacy concerns. And I can't imagine there's not going to be legislation down the road. I mean, there was just a big, meeting yesterday with Capitol Hill the big tech companies, and that's always a topic of conversation that comes up is how are you protecting the information and security of, of your users? So,
God, and then you just throw in the whole AI aspect. Remember we were talking about that a little bit and that phrase that still rolls around in my head, AI needs a data diet right now because there's just so much data out there and the scary things that AI can do. And man, there's all kinds of wormholes around that, but protecting the data, protecting yourself. I like where you're going, Chris.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Kevin, what about you? What's tech connecting with you right now?
I'll be honest with you. I mean, from a professional in my job, obviously there's a lot of the AI you're talking about and autonomous stuff, but on a more personal, what I've actually been into, believe it or not, is looking into mobile hotspots. I think we were talking offline earlier that I live rural. I mean, Chris looks like he's out in the wilderness, but I actually have old, almost wired style data, right? So, one meg up, kind of data. So I run into various times when my bandwidth with two teenagers. So a lot of people are familiar with the hotspots that you go to Verizon, you pick it up, you take it in the van with you, right? And you pay for, you know, whatever it is, 100 minutes or whatever. But I've actually been finding out that there are companies that offer a subscription-based hotspot. So you can actually go out and for, you know, $150 a month, you basically get mobile cellular data type speed, which is really about the only way that if you have teenagers, you got kids, anybody out there that you're trying to do gaming, you can't do it with a satellite, right? The only way to do it is either through your traditional networks, through your fiber optics and things like that, or these mobile hotspots. Both my kids actually currently right now use their cell phones as their mobile hotspots to run their gaming systems.
Gotcha.
So that's something I've been researching and finding out. It's been kind of interesting. I had no idea it existed, but they service, you know, the RV community. So anybody that's into camping and things like that.
Yeah. Let me know how that goes. I want to know because I looked into that, you know, when I cut the cable like a year and a half ago or something like that. And I was looking into all the, you know, what kind of internet I could get at the house. I was looking at, wasn't quite there yet. So Kevin, I'll be interested to see how that turns out for you there.
Definitely.
My friend. All right. So what do I got? Let's see. I'm going to go back to that Wall Street Journal article that I was reading, and I brought it up in our marketing team meeting earlier today. But, you know, it's the normal that we live in. And there were three breakaways of, and the title of the article was how companies are kind of rethinking this whole work from home and some of the lessons that have been learned here over the last 4 months. And some companies are kind of rethinking it because some things don't work. Or there's a couple areas where companies are kind of failing because of this work home environment. And the three things are collaboration. You know, collaboration just isn't what it used to be when you're in an online, when you're hopping on a WebEx or going to Microsoft Teams. Collaboration, just not the same. Mm-hmm. And that manifests itself into point number two, which are projects are taking a lot longer. So, you know, when we were all kind of in the office and team environments and projects would hum along, man, they're grinding out now. It's just taking a lot longer for projects to happen. And then the third thing in the article was training. A lot harder to train people. You know, you hire on a new employee. Usually, you know, there was that osmosis that would happen when you were in an office or a cubicle environment and people could get trained pretty quickly. Training, really brutal, hard to do when you're in this environment. So the reason I bring it up and the reason why it's connecting with me is it's just I'm cognizant of those three things that are making our world collectively a challenge in the business environment and just being cognizant of so that we can react to it as a society as well.
Yeah.
That's what's connecting with me.
Definitely.
What's connecting with you there, John?
So I'm just going to go fairly simple here.
Oh, we like simple.
I just upgraded to an iPhone 11
yeah.
about a week ago, which is, I know, kind of old news now. It's not like it's the latest and greatest.
Right.
You know, I'm sure there'll be a new one later this year. But, you know, still, it was an upgrade. I had an 8 before, so I was excited to get something new and different. But in particular, obviously, for the big change for mine was I went from the thumbprint ID, the fingerprint ID, to Face ID now.
Yes.
And that's all well and good, but it's funny because I'm already noticing the challenges. I'm sure anybody who's got Face ID knows wearing a mask doesn't really help you right now. Like it's not conducive to wearing masks. I won't be surprised if somehow someone figures out a way to make Face ID work even when you're wearing a mask.
Right.
Like, that's where you start getting into retinal scans maybe at some point.
Yes.
But then also the other fun thing for me is I'm a glasses wearer and I wear them pretty much all the time when I am awake. Well, every now and then I'll grab my phone at night to check something when I've got my glasses off and you know
it doesn't recognize me.
So I think I can add additional faces.
Okay.
Kind of like how you could add additional thumbprints or fingerprints if you wanted to the old one. So I need to do that for my non-glasses face which I do find interesting that like, you know, because glasses are not part of my face,
but yet
it identifies that as on the Face ID as like, if we're recognizing you, it's because you've got those glasses on and when you have them off, we don't recognize you now.
So that's
the stuff where I know that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, facial recognition, AI stuff going on. And again, that's another issue where people are like, man, is this good for us or not? There's a lot of potential issues and challenges that come out of that. But then I look at something like Apple, which is supposed to be a pretty cutting edge company. And I'm like, man, I can fool theirs just by taking my glasses off and putting a mask on. I mean,
well, here's what I don't understand about it. If I could interject here and actually sympathize with you, because we've all had that. Yeah. Anybody who has a facial recognition phone has had that moment. I'm standing in line. I got my mask on. Dang it. You know, it's not so. I got to
punch
in my
your old code.
Yeah. But here's what I don't understand as it relates to the iPhone. So the mask, it doesn't recognize me. But if I have sunglasses on, no problem. You know, right. It'll unlock the phone like, and dude, I got sunglasses on. This isn't a problem, but it may. Anyway.
So maybe it's more about the mouth area. I don't know. Well, the other thing that just occurred to me when I was just talking about this is it makes me think of the whole classic conundrum of Superman where everyone was always like, how does anybody not recognize that Clark Kent is Superman just because he puts some glasses on and changes his hair a little bit? Maybe this is what we're talking about. Maybe just like, you know, I mean, if the computers are too oblivious to figure it out when we take glasses on and off, maybe people are pretty dumb about that stuff too.
I don't know.
Well, that's what's Tech Connecting with us. You know, this was a great conversation. I want to very much thank Chris and Kevin. Thank you guys so much for being on with us today.
Yes, sir. Yep. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Definitely. But it is time for us to unplug. For Dean Reverman, I'm John Martin. Until next time. The Tech Connect podcast is brought to you by Zebra. Mobility is the future of the modern warehouse, as expectations for convenience and quick shipping from consumers has never been higher. You'll need to help your warehouse and distribution customers not only build the mobile infrastructure of today, but also for tomorrow and beyond.
To assist with that, Zebra has sponsored an ebook called 5 Surefire Ways VARs Can Help Warehouse and DCs Future-Proof Their Mobile Enterprise. It outlines how to position yourself as an expert and leverage the right technologies. To get your free copy, visit vartechnation.com and search for warehouse at the top of the page. While you're there, check out the rest of our free ebook library.